This is a production of Cornell University.
Public meeting of the order, October 18th. It's 5:40. Get things started here. I'll have Wendy get started with the roll call.
Chris Anklin. Matthew Balch. Daniel Bright. Tony.
Here.
Ben Carver.
Here.
Kate Carter Cram.
Present.
Charles Day. Jordan Dotzel. Ruth Epstein.
Here.
Natalie Gonzalez. Bridget Hayes. Amar Inyad Kali. David Kent.
Here.
Alexandra Kalisova. Dorothy Lane. Jack Levin. Genesis Lee. Chen Liu. Stephanie Lopez. Harshad Mika.
Here.
Marina Minnelli.
Here.
Chris O'Connor.
Here.
Christine Obadiwa. Alexandria Crusher.
Here.
Damian Sharp.
Here.
Georgia Smith. Carolyn Feinberg. William Way. Josh Washington.
Here.
Meredith Welch.
Here.
Henry Williams. Anna Wunsch.
Here.
And Preston Hanley.
Here. Okay, awesome. So, everybody, welcome to the new room. It's pretty sweet. A lot better than the old one. We're still having some issues with the specific speaker mics and the chairs. Hopefully get that worked out for the next meeting, and we'll just work with this mic up here now. So with that, I'll ask for any late additions to the agenda. Nick?
Sorry, could someone use their computer that's in here? Because of the echo?
Is this one up? That one up?
Is it this one here?
Mm-hmm. Also, I wouldn't have called the attendance. I'm not sure if he...
That's not a good one.
Hmm?
Oh, you got me.
I'm not sure if there was any other chair.
There's a resolution that I'd like to add to the agenda suggested by Logan Kenny, alum and former president and chair of the University of Denver. I'm also with this
Okay.
I think it was in the
We'll just move on. So we'll move on to the approval of the meeting minutes. So everybody want to take a look at that? Is there any changes, any concerns anybody has with that from last time we met on the 27th? Are there any objections to unanimously approving the meeting minutes? Okay, all right. So meeting minutes are approved, and we'll move on to presentations. So we're having a little bit of a mix up here. So Dean Hall will not be coming this evening. We're going to move Liz up from the front, just because she has another fire coming. So I'll give you the floor.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to figure out. I have this, like, muted here, and it's not.
Hey everyone, I'm Liz, for those of you who don't know me. I'm a second year MPA student. I also serve as a graduate and professional elected trustee. Is my sound okay? Can you hear me?
Yeah, stay with
me. Okay, sick. So this is an old slide deck from our PSAC, the Public Safety Advisory Committee feedback sessions, because I didn't want to create a new one if there was already one that had all the same slides on it that I was going to use. So the public safety, so next one, you can go to the next slide. So the Public Safety Advisory Committee is actually a committee that's mandated by New York State for all universities to have. It essentially is just like an oversight committee for like campus police departments. But after like the turmoil of summer 2020, President Pollack outlined a new initiative to promote racial justice, which included a revamp of the PSAT committee to evaluate and reimagine the university safety and security protocols. So I want to highlight that and emphasize this idea of university safety, right? Like, as we all know, like, this conversation about like what the police mean and what their positionality should be in our country is like a global and national conversation, but the PSAT committee was specifically focused on how we can better our campus community by like talking about our police department. Next slide. Okay, so the PSAT committee started meeting like regularly after the summer 2020, so last fall. And we had a lot of conversations about, again, like what campus public safety looks like. And so we conducted a large survey that went out to the campus community in the spring. And then after the survey results, there were focus groups to kind of go over the survey results and seek community input on how they were feeling, how people in our community were feeling about CUPD. And so this was various community stakeholders, so students, faculty, staff, and also CUPD officers. And so in July, the PSAC committee finally submitted their recommendations to the president. And Wendy, you can go to the next slide. This is just a list of all of the people on the committee. So by the New York State mandate, the breakdown of the committee has to be equal for, with faculty, staff, and students. So you'll see like equal number of graduate, undergraduate, faculty, staff, and then we also have ex officio members, which were just university administrators. Next slide. So recommendation number one, public statement and commitment to enacting anti-racist public safety. So like I said, President Pollack accepted our recommendation and expressed her support, and her statement can be found on the PSAC website along with all of the meeting minutes from all of our meetings and really like any info that we conducted together. So this recommendation really emphasizes that this statement that President Pollack put out needed to acknowledge that policing in the United States was a structurally racist institution. And it's really the university committing itself to acknowledging that the legacies of racism and then moving forward with a continuous examination of Cornell public safety infrastructure and how it impacts our students and our campus community. Next slide, please. Recommendation two, develop and implement an alternative public safety response model. So from the survey results and a lot of the data surrounding like how Cornell uses our police department, our whole public safety structure is like heavily focused and dependent on CUPD. So prior to like 2020, there weren't really many other public safety entities outside of like EMS and CUPD. And so that obviously stood as a problem, right? Because there are certain communities on campus and certain identities that feel like extreme discomfort and anxiety with the police department, especially being called for any public safety response. So next slide. So the recommendations for this were really just to try to limit the number of armed CPD officers and really promote and equip this alternative safety model. There's been creation of different working groups to talk about this public safety model. And in the next 2 years after these like three stages, we plan to implement some of these different protocols that are kind of outlined in the next two recommendations. Next slide, please. So recommendation three, design and implementation of educational campaigns or public safety calls. So like from the jump, we're all taught from childhood to remember your parent or guardian's phone number, and then also call 911 in case of an emergency, but it's never really framed what like emergency is, right? So a mental health care emergency would look different from like an active threat or a robbery, right? And so on our current system or previous systems after before these recommendations, every single issue that a student had, immediate call to CUPD. Again, it's not only not efficient, but does it make sense and isn't like super equitable? So recommendations to build and launch a public health and safety education campaign. And so, yeah, this would be like a collaborative effort between all of the public safety entities on campus. So recently in the past year, there was a creation of a community response team. So these are another group of people who are on call 24/7. They're currently stationed in the dorms, but they're like people that you could call for mental health emergencies and those such things. Okay, next slide. And then number four, diversification of public safety workforce through inclusive process. So we know that bringing diverse backgrounds into a group brings diverse perspectives and experiences, and even though representation isn't the only answer, it is a crucial first step, especially for us considering the demographics of our campus and the demographics of our police department so far. We are recommending that, oh wait, you can go to the next slide, Wendy. not only hiring a more diverse staff, but also reframing and rethinking about what our training looks like for our CPD officers, but not only just the officers, everybody who works in the CPD department. So that's also dispatch and people who do other jobs that make the police department function. And then this would also look like creating a continuing education curriculum for all public safety staff, including CPD, selected from existing Cornell classes. So I'm currently working pretty closely with Chief Honan and his deputy chief to talk about how we can build the skills within our CUPD officers that will allow them to be able to critically engage with themselves and their positionality, but also position them to be able to have like constructive and productive conversations with different campus constituencies. Next slide. Then also deployment, so obviously limiting the number of visible weapons and body armors, putting more support to our foot and bike patrols whenever is practical, and just really overall reevaluating oversight and all of their internal processes. Okay, next slide. So updates, like I said, on August 10th, President Pollack issued a response in support of the program, or of the recommendations in the report. So you can find that online. We've also added Vice President Lombardi as the co-chair of PSAC, along with CFO and EVP Joanne DeStefano. So with this overlap of student and campus life, which is where the community response team is housed, as well as the other areas that are represented in our PSAC group, it's really us focusing on creating and cultivating a more collaborative and cohesive campus community. The current meetings are already underway. We also are in the process of hiring consultants to help assist our different working groups refine the thematic recommendations. So for example, I'm currently in the process of creating a subcommittee, which is kind of the reason why I wanted to give this presentation today, on community engagement, right? So how do we, when we know that there are different, certain communities and certain campus constituencies that are just like inevitably going to be uncomfortable by police presence, how do we, one, set ourselves up for success, right, by helping build the skills, again, and CPD officers to not take the discomfort from certain students as a personal attack, but understand the institutional and systemic implications of what their positions and what their uniforms mean, while also like creating a safe space for these officers to not be viewed as this authoritative watchdog figure, but as a part of the Cornell community as a whole, right? Because our goal, for everyone's goal on this campus, is to make Cornell the most safe and equitable and inclusive space, and CUPD is not of that goal. They're an active part of it. So yeah, I asked Damian and Preston if I could give this presentation today because I'm actively seeking individuals to be interested in like being a part of this community engagement subcommittee and having these conversations and brainstorming ways in which we can, again, create and foster more collaborative campus community and focus on public safety for everyone. So yeah, if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me. Should I type my email in the chat? Can I use your computer?
No, the chat.
Just kidding.
Just give your net ID.
Okay, my net ID is E as in elephant, U as in dog, 466. Yeah, that's all I like. All I got. Thanks.
All right, thank you. Really.
All right, so now we're going to have a presentation from Ladrina.
Okay. everyone. My name is Ladrina Walton, and I'm Assistant Director of Institutional Equity and an investigator in the Office of Institutional Equity in Title IX. And our office has taken over the consensual relationships policy from academic HR. So we took that on about a year ago in September. And basically, the goal is to make sure that people know to report consensual relationships to our office so that we can review for conflicts of interest. And so what I'd like to, I'm going to be really brief if you want to go on to the next slide. So there's been an update as of August 2nd of this year. Some of you may be familiar, but what we've done is changed the policy so that staff members are prohibited from engaging in sexual or romantic relationships with undergraduate students. And so this mirrors what was already in the policy for prohibitions against these types of relationships between faculty members and undergraduate students. And so it's a very slight change. And again, the idea is really to make sure that Cornell's campus is free from conflicts of interest between undergraduate students and staff members, and we want to prioritize professionalism amongst staff members. And so it's pretty straightforward here. You can go on to the next slide. So the process started with me gathering feedback from different constituencies on campus, so directors of undergraduate studies, directors of graduate studies, the research centers. Everyone was able to provide feedback to the change. And then I made a presentation to the ERPG, so the Executive Policy Review Group. And I conducted some research on what other campuses were doing. Some other Ivy League campuses had already made a similar prohibition, and so we were in line with that. But still in the lead, there were only maybe, I think, three other institutions that had a similar prohibition, and so we're following, I guess, more of a trend now to do this. And so the interim status became approved as of August, which is where we are now. And so the hope is that we'll continue to garner feedback from you all, and you're definitely welcome to go to Mavis directly if you want to provide feedback. She is participating in our stakeholder review group. And the idea is that after we've heard from everyone, or at least heard from most of the constituencies that are present, we will prepare a report and present this to leadership. So under Mary Opperman's guidance and others in leadership, we hope to make this a permanent or a full change as of February. That's the goal. And so we're just interested in hearing from you all and others and what you think about the change. I'm happy to answer questions if you have them and hopefully clarify. And you can go to the next one. Yeah.
Yeah, just a little bit unclear. So you said there was a change and adjustment, slight, but I don't understand what was the jump from prohibition of those two in state or to what?
So previously, the policy only prohibited sexual or romantic relationships between faculty and undergraduate students. The change includes staff members. So now staff members and undergraduate students are prohibited from being in sexual or romantic relationships. Does that make sense?
Oh. I think it's definitely a step in a great direction, but I was wondering, so graduate students tend to be employed by the university either as officers of instruction, sometimes as staff members, research associates, postdoctoral fellows that can also be graduate students simultaneously. Would it be possible to include some more, explicit definitions for how graduate students are seen under this policy?
So the policy itself defines each of the it defines basically all of the identities that are listed. But what we do is if there seems to be a bit of a, if an individual is both a student and has a position as, not really staff, but if they're a working student, then we look to identify them as their primary reason, their primary purpose on campus. And so they're students first. So if it's a student worker, we're still including them for the protection under the policy. But the policy also defines other types of relationships and sort of spells out whether or not there is a need to disclose or a need for a recusal plan and those sorts of things. Does that answer your question?
Not quite. So student worker could mean, you know, an hourly wage worker that's, say, someone that's working for Cornell Dining. But, for example, most PhD students, or at least most PhD students in the natural sciences, don't really take any classes. Now, we are students by designation, but, you know, my primary role on campus is working in a lab and doing research. And you know, most PhD students, or if not all, get paid by the university. So, you know, in certain cases, we're seen as staff, and in other cases, we're seen as students. So I guess, is there a clear definition
if in your capacity as a staff member you're in a position of authority over an undergraduate student, that's something that would be prohibited or at least need to be reported. And so if there are questions about what position you're in, staff versus student, you should just consult. So reach out to the office, reach out to me directly, and then if need be, we can always do a recusal plan. But what we're doing is encouraging people to at least come forward and disclose the type of relationship that you're in so we can review it for a potential conflict of interest. Other questions?
Okay.
So that gives us an opportunity to look at whether or not there could be a conflict. And so there are some guidelines in the policy that talk about what should be disclosed. So your relationship, the partner's relationship, whether or not you have any direct influence over the work that they're doing. So I said I was going to be brief. If you have other questions or feedback, please contact me directly or Mavis. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
So we're going to move into the breakout sessions by the divisions. Within those breakout divisions, the Arts and Humanities division, you guys need to select two voting members. You guys have two vacancies. And at this point, for the charter and the bylaws, those have opened up to everybody. And within Arts and Humanities, regardless of, you know, if you're a master's student or a PhD student or whatever, just any of those, if you're in any of those programs, you're eligible for that position. So let's see, 608, we'll do 15 minutes. So we'll reconvene in 15 minutes, and you guys can. Alright, so we're reconvening here. Arts and Humanities, you guys have anything for us? Any new voting members? Possibly? No?
Sure,
yeah. Go for it.
So just to clarify, the point of the division breakouts is for the field reps to be able to talk to the voting members about the agenda and what's going to be discussed in the business of the day and open forum and et cetera. So since voting members are the only ones that can vote on resolutions, the goal is to talk about the resolutions and get feedback from field reps so that the voting members know what to do. That's one. And then two, the Arts and Humanities has two vacancies for voting members, which should be filled. Typically, the breakout sessions are by field of study for graduate students, and then all master and professional students go together in one group. The distinction being, if you are doing a thesis-based degree, then you would go in the graduate student groups, whereas if you are doing a research-based degree as opposed to a non-research based degree, then you would go in the graduate, in the professional and master student group. So regardless of what your field is. So the group divisions are arts and humanities, which would be PhD and MS students in arts and humanities. The other one is life sciences, which would be PhD and MS students in life sciences. You have, what are the other ones?
Physical sciences.
And then masters and professional students, which would include anyone pursuing an MA, an MEng, or a JD, or DVM, or am I missing any other professional degree? MBA. So that's how the division breakout works. And the purpose is to talk about the agenda and what the voting members should do. Hope that clarifies things.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. So I just want to circle back to the arts and humanities. Will you guys raise your hand if you're arts and humanities? Do you not have any? Well, that must be why we can't fill this vacancy. Okay. So we'll look into that. We'll probably send that out in the email next week. Okay. Well, that was easy. So we'll move on to the business of the day. So we'll move on to the election. So we have a vacancy with the Graduate Professional Student Programming Board chairperson. So they are, in fact, a voting member because they are the chair of their committee. Basically, that committee is empty at this point, and you'd be able to fill that committee. We'll help you do that. But it's basically just to help plan events, and you know, I think the graduate school typically does a ball every year. We are kind of restricted with what we can do because of COVID, but I still think it's a good position to kind of increase engagement and, you know, bring out the, you know, graduate school and let them know the GPSA knows how to have a good time, I guess. So would anybody like to nominate themselves, nominate somebody else for that position? Resolution that we have. Nick?
Yes, I yield the floor.
Nick, thanks for giving me the chance to speak. Good evening, all. I'm Roland Molina. Contrary to what my sweater may suggest, I do not attend MIT. I'm a Cornell undergraduate student, and more importantly, and the reason why I'm here is I'm the president of the Cornell Undergraduate Veterans Association. I come before you today seeking support for a resolution calling on Cornell University to appropriately recognize and honor Veterans Day. This resolution has the support of several other student leaders and alumni, such as SA President Anangin, the leadership of the Johnson Association of Veterans, leadership of Cornell Law Veterans, and of course, members within this body and engaged alumni. So I know you may be asking, why is this necessary? Why is it necessary to recognize Veterans Day within Cornell? So originally recognized by Congress as Armistice Day, marking the end of World War I, each year Veterans Day is nationally recognized in the United States on November 11th as the Day of Remembrance. Cornell University is currently home to over 400 veterans, 93 of which are undergraduate and that I represent, and then approximately 136 are graduate and professional students. So without official university recognition, members of Cornell's veteran community are required to use their vacation time or personal time to, you know, participate in Veterans Day events, of which in Ithaca, because there's such a large military community here, there's many. We, the co-sponsors of the resolution, believe that the sacrifices of these veterans and their families should be honored by the university, and they should be afforded the time and opportunity to celebrate a day that honors them. Additionally, it would give those that may not have any military affiliation a day of rest that was made possible by the sacrifices of those who have served our nation. Thus, the resolution ultimately asks that it be resolved that the Cornell University Administration cancels both course attendance for students and required work for staff each academic year on November 11th. Thanks for your time.
As a sponsor of the resolution, I'd like to just make an amendment. The wording is unclear. So in the abstract and in the final, be it finally resolved, it should say university administration will cancel both course attendance and required work for everyone. So graduate students, professional students, undergraduates, everyone that is affiliated with Cornell, not just veteran students or staff.
Okay, awesome. Thanks for that clarification. Anybody have any questions about the resolution?
We have to approve the amendment.
Oh. So we've done the amendment then? Okay. Anybody want any motions for a vote?
Call it for a vote.
Okay. Wendy, do we have a quorum? Raise your placards if you're for the amendment. Okay, all right. See all 17? Okay. All right, so amendment is approved. Anybody have any questions about the resolution? Cody?
Yeah, I'd like to, I guess, also suggest another slight amendment, which is to just delete the line that is reviewed by the committee. Just has like a placeholder line.
This is actually a different version. This is the
Okay, so we're good.
I guess also it doesn't necessarily need to say title placeholder under my name.
Questions? Amendments? Chris?
Point of order on the brief amendment. Is this kind of non-substantive? This kind of non-substantive amendment usually doesn't require a vote, right? It doesn't change the content of
the vote. How do you get those? Those
no? Oh, no, the title.
Oh, the title? Oh, okay.
Can't delete it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, but not. Entertain a motion to call a question. Ready?
Get the updated version there with the bottom language. Just so that we know exactly what that line. What would that amendment that we just approved to change that final line? The final year resolved.
It still says veteran staff in the abstract.
Right, because we just said that. I haven't changed it.
Once the resolution is approved, then those amendments will be made and the final resolution will be without that language.
Okay.
All right. Okay, so all those in favor, raise your placards. So we have all 17. Okay. Passed. So moving on from that, we're going to have reports of the officers and the committee updates. So if you will bring to the chair the report, Damian. Well, this time, Since the room mics aren't working, when it's your turn, we'll just have you come up and address from the podium.
Good evening, everyone. Thanks so much for being here. My name is Damian, and I'll give the executive committee update. Just a reminder that all voting members do need to be members of committees. The executive committee will send out an email this week soliciting your choices for committees. If we do not get one by the end of the week, what we'll do is assign you to a committee, and we'll notify you of that assignment. Also, voting members are asked to attend in person. You can only vote if you are in person. Field representatives are more than welcome to join us via Zoom. But also, if you are a field representative, please email Kate at your earliest convenience. We will send out an email regarding that as well. David and Yasmin brought to our attention that we've got several vacancies there. We'll send out an email, and you can fill in the Google Doc if you're a representative to a particular field.
No, what's the field representative?
So there are a multitude of field representatives across the university for the humanities, for different programs, medieval arts, things like that. So there's like 100, I can show you a complete list of all the field representatives. But some of them are currently missing, and so we need to know if you are a field representative. Folks, if you're on Zoom, again, email Kate if you are a field representative. And the assembly doesn't have record of that. If you're here in person, please feel free to talk to us afterwards so that you can record your which fields you're representing. Josh, I'll show you this list in just a little bit. That is all for the executive committee. We will continue to work on getting the room mics working. I know that some of the folks via Zoom are having a hard time hearing, and we're working on that. This new room does, I think, help a little bit, but we'll continue to improve the Zoom model as well. I'll turn it over to Preston to give a quick update on the resolution we passed in the last meeting regarding the listserv.
Can you clarify
who's
Kate on her email?
I'm sorry, Kate's down here. Her email is KKC74. That's her net ID. She is the Vice President of Operations.
Thanks, Damian. So a little update on the resolution we passed last week regarding the listserv use. We met with Zoom 4, and we were actually able to get another use of the listserv and gain access to an email builder, so that way we can form our own emails. And so Genesis will kind of get into that a little bit more in the communications update. So I'll throw it over to Kate. Do you have any updates?
I don't think at this point. I think anything that is an update will be sent out in the newsletter later this week, or Damian already mentioned it with regards to field members.
All right, sounds good. Ben?
Hey, everyone. I don't actually have much in the way of updates. What we did, because I was elected so late in the process, we had to move back the application process for byline-funded organizations. So that deadline will be coming up shortly. At this point, I've received about half of those applications. We will have a bit of a rush because the timeline is so condensed, so we'll have a couple of weeks. So if any of you know people who are parts of those organizations, please encourage them to get the applications as quickly as possible, and then get in touch with me to set up meetings. The one exception to that is internal committees, so finance and executive committee, and I'm forgetting one, have not submitted applications, and I'll be reaching out to you guys separately. But that's it.
Awesome, thanks. All right. Have Genesis, application committee.
Hello everybody. So I have four things to report. The first thing is that I just sent out an email to all of the committee chairs to collect your inputs, to collect all of the chairs' inputs into the newsletter this month. The second thing is that I'm working on a newsletter in the email builder right now, and working closely with the executive committee members, also Gina and Wendy as well. The third one is that Caroline, who is the chair for the Finance Committee, she reached out to me, and she hopes to advertise for a project to connect STEM professions of Cornell with high school students from the country from the entire country. So like I will get that done onto the newsletter, so like you guys can be informed, like, you know, if you are trying to get involved to, like, you know, engage with the high school kids, like helping them out, like as Cornellians, like please just like check the email that we will get out like by the end of this week or earlier next week. And then the last thing was that I just want to say a big thank you for Mavis, because we worked closely to bring Ladrina, who was the speaker today, talking about sexual relationships, consensual relationships and stuff like that. So just want to say a thank you to her, because she actually attended a 3-hour meeting or something to get that done and get this presentation into our meeting. So that's it for my report.
All right, awesome.
Yeah, sure.
So I forgot to mention that the appropriations committee, other than myself, is still fully empty. So I am awkwardly operating as a committee unto myself.
Man.
I don't like, because it puts a lot of work on me, but it also doesn't feel particularly transparent or democratic to be sort of the one decision maker. So if you could reach out to anyone that you know or anyone that might be interested or has sliver of interest, that would be really great. Just put them in touch with me. My NID is DC85, so that would be great.
So yeah. For that, I will be sending you an email, like asking you to write like a little one or two sentences so I can put it into the newsletter and then ask for other people.
Yeah. Can you just repeat your NID one more
time? Yeah, E as in boy, C as in cat, 85.
Yeah, so if you're a voting member, if you don't have a committee yet, just kind of, you know, shop around, I guess, and get involved. There isn't anything that says that you can't be a part of multiple committees, so if there's multiple things that you're interested in and you have a lot of time on your hands, then get involved. We appreciate it.
On that note, though, the Appropriations Committee recommendation to this whole body will be coming in mid-November, so the sooner the better.
Caroline?
I have nothing.
You have nothing? Okay. David?
No updates.
No updates. Sean?
Hi, everybody. I'm Parshad from DISC, and we just had a slight update. We are working to gather data from Geneva campus to draft the resolution, and does anybody know about the Facebook group? Yeah, if somebody does, please just reach out to me, and yeah, thank you.
All right, so back to your words. Pardon? Okay, all right. The general committee?
The general committee, but we met. We approved several new degrees and several graduate faculties. If you want more information on that, feel free to reach out.
You want to give an update for the graduate school too?
I don't know what the graduate school
is. I thought that was you.
Because I'm on the general committee of the graduate school.
Oh.
The general committee did meet and Dan's there. The general committee approves degree programs and approves graduate faculty, and we approve degree programs and graduate faculty.
Okay, all right. And with that, we move into the open forum. Does anybody have anything they want to talk about?
Please, James.
Jen looks like she wants. She. Whoa. But I'm happy to answer your question.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm like looking at the stuff.
Jim, we can't hear you.
We can't hear you. Okay, never mind.
I'm unmuted.
Okay, there we go. We got you. You can start over. We can hear you now.
Okay. I was about to type it all in chat, but I'm Jan Allen, the Lower Creek one. I don't have an announcement to make tonight, but I'm happy to answer in a minute. I have questions you might have from graduate school. I'm sure Dean Moore would be willing to do the same. If there are no questions, I'm happy to yield my time back.
Anybody have anything they want to add before we head out?
Yeah, another thing, I don't necessarily need to make this a big discussion, but one of the things that came up between last meeting and this meeting is the room and the facilities that we use so people on Zoom can hear us and see us and participate, presumably, hopefully, in the meeting. One thing that I didn't realize goes along with that discussion is that the last room was free. This one is $300 per meeting, which obviously adds up.
Yeah, they aren't working though. We couldn't, that was something, we'll have to, before the next meeting, we can definitely get some tech support. I think that comes with our $300 booking. We should definitely try to get our money's worth. But we can email them after this meeting and make sure that before the next meeting we have a better idea of how everything works. Nick?
Could you give a clarification about, you know, Zoom participation, because my understanding was that in order to participate in the meeting, you have to be present in person. Is that still the case? Just kind of generally, I guess, there seems to be some confusion around it. So if we could just...
Yeah, so kind of like what Damien said in, you know, his executive address, we want everybody to be in person if they want to participate. You know, we have the Zoom set up so that if you aren't able to come to the meeting, you can at least watch, but at this point we aren't allowing Zoom participation.
If you still may contact your field or voting member to voice
yeah.
that
yeah.
kind of concern to me at the meeting.
Could you say, like, you not the voting, like voting and, like, things?
Voting and being able to, like, hold the floor.
Like, that's exactly what he just said.
The person actually messaged me, so I'll have someone speak with the executive committee about this.
Okay, sounds good. Okay, anybody have anything else they want to add?
Just that again, we have some other questions. I would love to hear.
Alright. Entertaining any motions? During the meeting, see you guys in 2 weeks.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.